And on today's Windy City Queercast, oh, it's the eve of the inauguration. Change is a-comin'. And Deb Pierce is on the Queercast with me today. And we are talking about the inauguration and our anticipation of the blessed event. And also, we have lots of news because there is just so much going on in these early January weeks. And more to come, I'm sure, with this new administration. But there's still a lot going on in the GLBT community. And Richard Knight Jr. has a movie review. Well, it's a live made-for-TV movie with Sigourney Weaver, Prayers for Bobby, coming out this weekend. What did he say about it? And also, our money. How do gay and lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people need to think about money in this current economic crisis and the current economic climate? Well, Joe Capp is here with me. He's a financial advisor in the D.C. area, and he is going to be telling me about GLBT community and our unique needs with money and our finances. It's a really chocked full show. What you've come to expect here.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Deb Pierce.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This Queercast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming.
American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Listening to the Windy City Queercast show number 279. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Deb Pierce.
Back in Toronto.
Yes. And sadly, the weather is pretty much exactly the same. Whatever storm you had, we got it and then some. And you guys are blizzarding. And we've just been through a whirlwind of weather lately.
Oh, my Lord. Well, yeah. It was sure amazingly fun to have you here for a couple of days, and I think people that have picked up the paper or gone online have seen pictures and coverage, or if they were at the event, but it was a really good time. Have you caught up with your rest, being back in Toronto and waking up at the crack of dawn?
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe if I had a regular job time, I would, but no, getting up at 4:15 and, you know, and partying, which meant staying out till what, midnight, one? I don't really go out anymore, but it was well worth it. And you and Amy and I, I've got to thank you, and Chicago itself, just had a great time and came back and just can't stop talking about how great and how big the bars are there. Sidetrack, yeah. Like really, it's like a mall for gays. It's amazing. We don't have that here.
It's like a mall for gays with a roller coaster really? Inside.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it seems like right now there is something happening every week, and we're here pretty much on the eve of the big inauguration.
I say one more sleep until the nightmare ends.
Exactly.
And I'll wake up soon.
And as we're recording this, the big inaugural kickoff event is about to happen, and it's pretty amazing because, you know, there was all this conflict with Reverend Rick Warren from his California church and his very right-wing pulpit, comparing homosexuals to bestiality and incest. A lot of gay activists got very upset about it. And then here last week, a week ago, we were told that the Reverend V. Gene Robinson of New Hampshire, who's the Episcopal's openly gay bishop, is giving this invocation today at the Lincoln Memorial. And do you think that this is just in direct reflection that we've got the gay bishop now, that we have the guy who hates gays?
Yeah, absolutely, I do.
Yeah. Is that a good thing? I mean, would, being a Canadian, would you think, well, they should all be there? We should see what the right and the left think.
Well, I think that, I think that's a reflection of probably how everybody feels to have both sides there, right?
Right.
But it's also interesting, you know, politics and religion.
Mm-hmm.
To say the least. And even recently, the coverage about the Windy City media group going back to Obama's stance on same-sex marriage and religion, you know, that kind of thing, I think it's all very telling. And so I think it's all very timely, to be honest.
Well, yeah, and you're referring to the fact that in the middle of last week, Windy City Times issued in our most recent paper that's out right now, you can download it at windycitymediagroup.com, showed documents that now President-elect Obama, when he was running for the Senate, that he filled out. You know, the newspaper sends out how politicians stand on certain topics. He filled it out, and he said that he believed in same-sex marriage and that he would work to work against any laws that would prohibit it. And it got picked up, much to my surprise, while I was watching my favorite lesbian, which is Rachel Maddow, on MSNBC, on the Rachel Maddow show. And there I am watching it. She's actually talking about Gene Robinson, and she quotes Windy City Times and says, Windy City Times on the Rachel Maddow. I squealed in glee.
That's an amazing moment, isn't it?
It was very cool.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering.
Of course you would. I mean, you guys are we're doing all the same sort of thing, right? Of course. And this is a great media outsource to you know, what you want to know about human rights campaigns and, you know, Reverends of New Hampshire, big out gay reverends. I mean, it makes sense to quote you guys.
Well, I think it's interesting that, you know, this came early on where Judy Shepard, a year and a half ago, really asked, you know, had a whole campaign with the Matthew Shepard Foundation saying we must hold our politicians accountable. And not only asking them the tough questions to elect them, but as soon as they're in office, we have to keep their feet to the fire. And I'm seeing the GLBT community kind of do that with Obama. You know,
and the fact that he said gay in his acceptance speech was phenomenal to me. I almost fell off my own chair when he was talking about abled and differently abled people and just encompassing all of the world as we know it and the people that everybody lives and works with, not just the people that associate specifically with politicians, which is not real world by any stretch of the imagination. It actually taps into who the world that the country that he's representing actually exists as, which are differently abled and people of color and gay people.
Yeah.
Particularly the gay people, frankly.
Particularly.
I like that to be our focus.
Yeah. So tell me, you were saying earlier, religion and politics. You live in Canada. I live in the great U.S. of A. and grew up in the South. So those two things have no separation in my upbringing.
No, and they don't historically in the United States of America, as I've come to realize with
So
Pat
how
Robinson
is it in Canada? Do you feel that religion plays any part in politics?
No, it really kind of doesn't. It really sort of doesn't. I mean, there's just not a whole lot of the God stuff in a lot of the speeches. There's not a whole, because the diversity within Canada, which makes Canada, a collage more than a melting pot, more of a mosaic, every religion and every one of those kind of denominations ideally are embraced. So there isn't necessarily, like, I couldn't tell you if our prime minister was Catholic, was Protestant. I couldn't tell you that. I mean, maybe I should know that. Maybe people that are more politically aware would know that, but it's never part of speeches and people that are standing next to them at the podium. It's never like that.
It's so unfathomable to me that you say that you don't know.
I don't know
what he is.
It doesn't come up.
That's so
And I don't
wild.
Think politics and religion should come up.
Well, of course, our country was founded on the separation of church and state. And yet, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, would you even be able to guess, though, that you would have I mean, you probably wouldn't even be able to guess that if you have more Jewish or Catholic or Islamic, or if you would say, right, we have all of those in political power.
Well, I would have to say that, well, there's still a lot of white men. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, if you're going to go on color, I probably don't think there's a whole lot of Muslim. But yeah, no, I really wouldn't know. Christian for sure, but I don't really know. And it just doesn't really come up. I mean, decisions might be based on their upbringing, as a lot of people in and out of politics, things are based on what you know, how mm-hmm. do you know what you know?
Mm-hmm.
But we've got a woman of color, Michaëlle Jean, who's our governor general right now, and I don't know what religion she is, but...
Well, I don't know what Condoleezza Rice is either, but to me, she's just of the religion of Bush, so...
Right?
You know.
Let's just ban that religion, shall we?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's exactly true.
Yeah, no, and I really think because things are so contrived biblically, and I'm not saying, I don't believe, but things are so contrived biblically that if you do start to quote about how things should be run in your country by how things are written in the Bible, I don't think there's room for movement, democracy, mm-hmm. change, progression. I think it's a nice adage, it's a nice way to live your life, to be nice to other people, but those are the same people that are being kind to their neighbor and yet being absolute and complete bigots when they're making these laws and decisions.
Yeah. Oh, it's true. It's true. Well, listen, we got to take a really quick break. There is a ton of news to give to you today. It's a big week. It has been a big week. There just seems like this 2009 is snowballing with stories and a huge anticipation of the change that's about to happen that we're right on the precipice of here in the States, but also a lot of things going on around the world and in the entertainment news. So we're going to do some news and we'll be back with Deb Pierce and we're going to talk about money, money, money,
money.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News.
President Barack Obama followed a meeting with conservative columnists by dining with liberal commentators on January 14th. Guests included lesbian Rachel Maddow and openly gay columnist Andrew Sullivan. This week, Rachel Maddow made reference on her show to Windy City Times cover story revealing Obama's written support of same-sex marriage in 1996.
The ACLU filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Department of State and contractor Triple Canopy Incorporated, charging that they discriminated against a former veteran who is HIV positive. A motion filed by Triple Canopy confirmed that the State Department contract required a negative HIV test for all employees, which the ACLU charges violates the Rehabilitation Act and the Americans for Disabilities Act.
Laura Calvo, the treasurer of the Democratic Party of Oregon, has become the first openly transgender officer of a state Democratic Party.
The California Council of Churches and others have filed a friend of the court brief with the California Supreme Court, asking the court to invalidate Proposition 8. This brief argues that Proposition 8 poses a severe threat to the guarantee of equal protection for all, and that the measure did not go through the correct legislative process needed for such a dramatic change to the California Constitution.
In Atlanta, several dozen gay rights activists planned to protest the appearance of Reverend Rick Warren at Ebenezer Baptist Church January 19th as part of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The protest is part of the national backlash against President-elect Barack Obama because he asked Warren to deliver the invocation at his inauguration.
Log Cabin Republicans ended 2008 with $100,000 of debt. President Patrick Salmon said the economic crisis certainly has affected Log Cabin's ability to raise as much as had been predicted for the year.
Robert Gibbs, a spokesperson for President-elect Barack Obama, said he is committed to ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell. However, Gibbs added that terminating the policy will not happen right away as the economy is Obama's top priority.
Dave Kuczynski claims that Ed Curry of the New York Knicks sexually harassed him and hurled racist slurs at him. Kuczynski, who is seeking $98,000 in back pay and expenses and $5 million in compensatory damages, said that the 6'11 Curry exposed himself and called him a white devil. Curry, a former Chicago Bull, said that he is shocked by the lawsuit.
Reverend Al Sharpton criticized the Mormon Church and other conservative faiths while preaching in Atlanta's Tabernacle Baptist Church, chastising them for taking action to support California's Proposition 8 while not getting involved in other social issues. Sharpton was in Atlanta to celebrate the launch of the Alliance of Affirming Faith-Based Organizations, started by the Reverend Dennis Meredith, who is bisexual.
In Washington, D.C., three gay men are being charged with conspiracy and evidence tampering in connection with the August 2006 murder of Robert Wone. Wone was found stabbed to death in a townhouse where the three men lived together.
In Pittsburgh, police are investigating the death of an Ohio man, Cleophas Petway, at a private health club that catered to a gay clientele. Club Pittsburgh stayed open even after complaints about nude go-go dancers, X-rated movies, and other sexual activity. Authorities are waiting Petway's toxicology results.
In Nyack, New York, Mayor John Shields, who issued marriage license to same-sex couples in 2004, has announced that he will not run for re-election. However, Shields, who also wanted his own marriage license with then-partner Bob Streams, will leave the Democratic Party as well, saying that neither Republicans or Democrats are serving the LGBT community.
In California, protesters against the Church of Scientology claim that the organization's attorneys have procured medical data about two of the activists and are using their HIV-positive status to try to stop the picketing at a compound known as Gold Base. Scientology has a policy stating that homosexuals are low on the tone scale and should be disposed of quietly and without sorrow. At last year's Toronto Gay Pride Parade, Scientologists said they could cure homosexuality.
And in world news, in England, Staffordshire University has introduced toilets for transgender individuals at its student union nightclub. Faye Wood, president of the student union, told a local newspaper that, "We are trying to make things as easy as possible for all our students. We do have transgender students here, but the new facilities are not just for them. They are for the androgynous students as well."
In just 2 years, Product Red partners and events have generated over $120 million to help eliminate AIDS in Africa. Now the L Network will simultaneously feature Red in more than 30 editions globally with editorial content provided by Giselle Bundchen, Scarlett Johansson, and Bono. The issue appears January 17th in L France. The February issues of 30 other international editions go on sale mid-January.
More than 1,000 people recently took part in the first officially sanctioned gay pride event in Hong Kong. A coalition of HIV organizations and LGBT groups organized the event. Amnesty International's GLBT coordinator in Hong Kong, Madeline Mok, said, "In mainland China, it's impossible to have a gay pride march, so this is a very important day that has attracted many people to Hong Kong."
The Swedish Embassy in Vietnam is showing financial support for the Center for Studies and Applied Sciences in Gender, Women, and Adolescence, a campaign that is trying to reduce violence against lesbians and promote human rights for sexual minorities. The center will receive over $300,000. Homosexuality is legal in Vietnam. However, same-sex marriages are illegal, and there are no legal protections against discrimination.
And in entertainment news, the London venue The Astoria, home of the legendary GAY night for 15 years, is going to be demolished to make way for Crossrail, a new transport system. The GAY night, now held at Heaven Nightclub, has played host to Kylie Minogue, Madonna, Christina Aguilera, and the Spice Girls.
Italian soccer player Marco Borellio has claimed that he cannot wait to see David Beckham naked when Beckham temporarily plays with Borellio's team, AC Milan, this year. Borellio said, "I have a dressing room curiosity. I want to see if he is as quipped as he is in the Armani underwear ads." Don't we all?
Yes, we do. Actress Kate Hudson has laughed off an online rumor that she kissed a female friend while on a trip to Miami. "A friend called me and said, 'Are you making out with girls?'" Hudson told the reporter, to which she said she responded, "I was like, what are you talking about? Strictly boys for me."
Madonna's gay brother Christopher Ciccone is saying that actress Demi Moore stopped being friends with him after she met Ashton Kutcher. It's not the first time Ciccone's spoken out against Moore. Last year, he claimed that Moore squirted breast milk all over some lesbian friends of his.
That's just bad manners.
Mom!
Lesbian actress Jerry Jones, who is currently being seen in her role as U.S. President Alison Taylor on the TV show 24, recently had gallbladder surgery. The show's executive producer said that Jones went to the hospital in the past few days and had her gallbladder removed. He added that she is home and she is fine.
Cartoon creator Stan Lee is developing the world's first gay superhero for a new TV show. The character, reportedly the son of another superhero, is a high school student called Tom Creed, who will be forced to hide his growing superhuman powers and the fact that he is gay.
And that's the Week in News, brought to you by Windy City Times.
This is Katie Curtis, and you're listening to Windy City Queercast.
Only my eyes are the same.
Deb, is Canada feeling the economic crunch in the same way that you think Americans are?
I don't think quite to the same degree. I think people are reacting. Maybe people are being alarmist because we hear what's going on down there. But absolutely, the economic bailout here for all of the top three car makers, that was really indicative because we supply about 10% of your vehicles down there. So a lot of our workers are being laid off, which is kind of synonymous with the car industry. It does fluctuate, but there is something very telling about what's happening south of the border and how it trickles up here, for sure. Because North America is, we're so related in so many ways, right?
Yes.
And
we're incestual cousins, I believe.
We're what now?
We're incestual cousins.
We are sort of.
Ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding. We sit to the south
of
you.
Squeal like a... Well, my best friend's a graphic designer in a really big graphic design company that has places in New York, Toronto, and London. And left, right, and center around her, people are being let go. She's one of the only people standing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is hitting. It's not hitting my industry of radio yet. People are still buying, but who knows?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. Do you and your partner, do you talk about money?
We do. It's a tough conversation.
It is, isn't it?
It's really personal. And I've been so single-minded for so long, even when I've been in relationships. I've never sort of shared money. And now we obviously have our own accounts, but we also put money into an account. We just bought a vacation from a credit card that I had that I've also put in her name, kind of thing. So, we have conversations around it. Sometimes I don't have much to say because, you know, money is a sensitive topic.
It is
because it's
very
prideful, right? People are prideful around their money stuff.
Well, people are prideful around their money, you know, and Susie Orman always says, when I listen to her, that she just thinks everybody should know what everybody makes, so everybody understands their worth, so everybody, so it's
like
all
your coworkers
out in the open.
And everything. I'd love
absolutely
to know what my coworkers make.
Absolutely, she thinks every coworker should know what every coworker makes.
Oh.
And you know, it's really interesting because there are so many people who won't talk about money.
Right.
Aren't realistic about money. And as GLBT people, we possibly need to be more realistic and more thoughtful than our straight allies. And so today I want to start just at the beginnings of that conversation. There's a really great website. It's called queersense.com, queersense.com. And I started talking with the founder of Queer Sense, and she turned me on to Joseph Kapp, who is on the show with us today, and really just to talk to us about not really financial planning. He's not going to tell you where to exactly put it, in what mutual fund or what stock to buy. But really, what are some of the factors and questions that we should ask ourselves about money? And also, what is unique about our situation as GLBT people? So we're going to take a real quick break. I'm going to tell you what's going on in the theater scene for a little entertainment, just to lift your spirits if the financials are bringing you down. And hey, our homegirl Jennifer Hudson's going to be singing at the Super Bowl. Did you hear that?
I did hear that this morning, and it's her first major public appearance since
the tragedy
in her family. So good for her, and I think that's just the love that she's going to need to feel.
Exactly. It's going to be fantastic for her to be surrounded by thousands, tens of thousands of people loving her to bits. So, and she will sing out for all of us, I am sure. So that's very exciting. Lots going on in the theater scene. We come back, Joe Kapp with me, and we are talking about finances and the GLBT community.
Hello, this is Mary Testa.
And Jackie Hoffman.
From the Broadway musical smash Xanadu. And we have something very important we need to talk to you about.
happiness.
Speak the truth, Sister Jackie.
Are you content with your life? Are you frustrated? Do you come home at the end of the day and go, what the hell was that about?
If so, and we think you might, then you could use a laugh.
A good one, or two.
Or a bazillion, and we know just where you can get them.
At Xanadu.
People, it's the biggest surprise hit in Broadway history, with an adorable love story, fabulous songs, inspired hilarity, all wrapped up in a sweet 90 minutes.
I love that part. You're home in time for Top Chef.
Oh, and if you think we're that crappy 80s movie, think again.
Please, the critics are gaga for this thing. The New Yorker actually called us ridiculously brilliant. I do not lie.
So it's not like we're therapists or anything, but if you want to get happy, you could take pills, or you could come and see Xanadu.
For tickets to Xanadu, visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of January 19th, 2009, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
When the mistress is away, the maids will play. The Maids by Jean Genet, playing now at the Writers Theater. Don't miss this seductive French production. The Chicago Sun-Times raves that the actresses are magnificent, and the Chicago Tribune calls it accomplished and provocative. $40 tickets are still available. For your tickets to The Maids, visit www.writerstheater.org.
Now playing at the Court Theater is The Wild Duck, the searing tragicomedy presented by award-winning director Charles Newell. The Wild Duck will be performed at the Museum of Contemporary Art through February 15th. For more information on The Wild Duck, visit courttheater.org.
Don't miss the hilarious comedy Don't Dress for Dinner, starring Burn Notice star Jeffrey Donovan and Patricia Callenberg, formerly of TV Sisters. Playing now at the Royal George Theater. For tickets to Don't Dress for Dinner, go online at don'tdressfordinner.com.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
I'm Richard Nicotino with another Night at the Movies Minute. It's true. Many of the best roles for women of a quote-unquote certain age these days are to be found on television. Lifetime, the cable network famed for its, quote, television for women, unquote, slogan, has snagged one of the best, Sigourney Weaver, to star in one of their made-for-TV movies. But Prayers for Bobby, premiering this Saturday the 24th on the network, is anything but the standard female in crisis, mother and daughter dating the same man fare typical of the network. It's easy to see why Weaver signed on for the film. Her role as the devout Christian mother of a troubled gay teen is richly complex, and she's magnificent in the part. Based on true events, the majority of the film takes place between 1979 and 1982, the three-year period in which high school teenager Bobby Griffith, played by Ryan Kelly, comes out to his family, finds himself adrift from them, especially from Weaver as the mother and Henry Cherney as his tongue-tied father, and then follows the sad set of circumstances that will be familiar to a generation of gay men who came out during the period, yours truly included, and often led to tragedy. It's at this point in the film that Weaver's performance shifts into more complex territory. Faced with responsibility in the face of tragedy, the mother at last questions the rigidity of what she has been taught. Bobby Griffith's story is sadly nothing new in life and on film, and Prayers for Bobby also has moments of an after-school special quality to it, though it does draw its tears fairly honestly. But when Mary's enlightenment from a conservative Christian to an all-accepting one, which the last half of the film delves into, the movie also touches on something larger that feels up to the moment, like something going on in the culture right now. Can it be possible that centuries of acquiescing to religious terrorists by our people will soon be on the wane? Is true tolerance really upon us at last? That may be a reach, but didn't we also just begin a new era of inclusiveness on January 20th? So, forgive my optimism, at least for a day or two. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Minute.
Are you isolating? Listening in the dark? Keeping yourself hidden away? Come out wherever you are. Come on out and post a comment. It's so easy. Just visit WindyCityQueerCast.com and post a comment on any show. We don't bite. We'd love to know you're listening. So visit WindyCityQueerCast.com and leave me a comment, please. The financial future may look bleak for many Americans, with bank bailouts, the auto industry and insurance agencies in line to be next, an enormous deficit, tons of financial fear permeating the globe between every conversation. So these are uncertain times for sure. But for us as GLBT people, how does it affect us uniquely? And what is our response to the financial crisis and our finances in general? Well, Joe Kapp is a nationally recognized leader in the area of GLBT financial and estate planning. He and his business partner, Nick Burkholder. Both are featured financial and money columnists in the Advocate magazine and the Washington Blade. And so he's a really great person for us to have here on the QueerCast to talk about finances and the GLBT community in general. Hey, Joe, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. Thanks for having me on the program today.
I have wanted to have you on for a couple of months, and you know, everything has been changing so fast with what is going on financially around the world. But even if we weren't having the financial issues that we're having, as GLBT people, we have some unique financial issues. And that's really what I have wanted to talk about today. Do you think GLBT people talk more or less about money than our straight allies?
You know, I'm not sure that the conversation is either more or less. I think, you know, before we look at the differences, there are some commonalities that I think are probably first and foremost to get out of the way. And,
great.
And one of the things that we see, regardless of whether people are straight or they're gay or their sexuality, is just the overall lack of focus on goals. Unfortunately, a lot of us lose sight of our goals after we graduate from school, we get a job, and then we get the increasing amounts of pay. And whether you're gay or straight, what often happens is we expand our appetite of consumption to consume more and more. And so we end up to the point where in college we were able to exist on ramen noodles and soup. And by the time we start working, we end up in significant amounts of credit card debt. And people often have lost sight of what their ultimate goals are and haven't aligned their spending with who it is that they really are. Where this seems to be of some importance within the gay and lesbian community is this whole notion that I call being fierce and fabulous and spending money on trying to be fierce and fabulous and, you know, conspicuous consumption. And that's really an area that I think probably is fairly pervasive within the gay and lesbian community of wanting to have Dolce & Gabbana and all the hottest, latest brands. Ultimately, what we end up doing, though, is sacrificing our financial independence and our financial security. And that's actually a big issue for us.
So we almost, I mean, this is kind of how everyone in the world, but especially in America, living outside of our means is what we're hearing is how we got in this mess. I mean, people lending people money that they had no ability to pay back. But what I'm hearing from you is that in the GLBT community, we're seeing a lot more of keeping up with the Joneses. And that's the reason for perhaps the spending, that it's not realistic.
And in some cases, it's even trying to keep ahead of the Joneses. You know, we kind of have this idea that we want to be chic and ultra chic and hip and those sorts of things. And so we end up spending money on things that don't necessarily add a value to who we are as individuals and don't necessarily increase our happiness. Right. You know, as part of our planning practice and the clients that we work with, one of the things that we do a lot of research on and studying is on happiness. And there is no direct correlation between an increase in finances after you get above a certain amount of money that you make above object poverty. Once you go ahead and increase the amount of money that you make, there's not a corresponding increase in the amount of happiness.
Hmm.
So really spending money on material goods almost has the effect of the more stuff that you end up having has the impact of potentially even decreasing, because all of a sudden you have all of these things that end up owning you, and you're in a situation where you have massive amounts of credit card debt or in a situation that you feel financially unstable. And the reason why that's important, particularly for the gay and lesbian community, is for a couple of reasons. One is the laws don't protect us the same way.
Mm.
We can be fired in many jurisdictions from our jobs merely because of the fact that we're gay. So by not being in a situation where we're financially stable, we put ourselves in jeopardy if we are fired because we're gay. We don't really have any recourse. We can't sue as a result of that. And so, you know, for that particular situation, we can also be thrown out of residential living in communities around the United States merely because of the fact that we're gay. So, you know, one of the things that we believe in strongly and our believe is one of the most important things for the LGBT community is really to reach this point of financial independence, so that they're never we as a community are not reliant on somebody else to make financial decisions for us. Yet we're going ahead making those decisions on our own behalf.
So, what does that mean to be financially independent to you?
Well, you know, that definition differs for every person, but for our definition, it really means being in a situation or to the point at which you have enough assets that should something happen to you financially, you're able to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
In the short run, it means having a cash cushion anywhere from 3 to 6 to 9 months worth of expenses saved up in the bank, so that if something should happen, you have the ability to go ahead and make financial decisions that are most prudent as opposed to being reactionary. In the long term, it means having enough money saved up so that those assets are able to take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
And for in other circumstances, rather than working for a business or working for somebody else, it's owning the business and saying, okay, you know what, I'm going to make the decisions about how to run the business so that I can never be discriminated against. Or in situations with real estate, rather than renting from somebody, it's owning real estate and renting to other people so that you become the landlord and you're able to make those decisions on other, you know, as opposed to having those decisions being made for you.
Do you think this is an old theory? I've been interviewing people for a long time. This
sure.
is an old theory of mine, but I see a lot of this federal and even state homophobia against us and same-sex marriage and all of this. I ultimately see it really as a financial issue because
yeah.
I think the smoke and mirrors is this idea that it's spiritual. And I definitely believe there are people who believe that with great fervor. But I believe kind of the puppet masters understand that there are so many financial freedoms to same-sex marriage or to civil unions. Can you talk about that, or do you agree with me, or...
Well, I'm a financial advisor, and so, you know, when I wake up every morning, I put on a lens and I look through things, almost virtually through financial cost-benefit analysis. So I'm
right.
actually in agreement with you.
Yeah.
You know, there are many different aspects. And if you look back on the history of marriage, the nature and the role of history has changed throughout the course of time. It wasn't always this notion that we have now of this sort of spiritual religious aspect of it. You know, way back when, in the initial inklings of marriage, marriage was really about ownership,
mm-hmm.
ownership rights and property rights,
mm-hmm.
and women were property. And over the course of the years, that notion obviously has changed. And we're in a situation now where once again, that notion and the definition of marriage has to change. The reality is, you know, for us from an LGBT perspective, it affects us significantly when we start looking at the dollars and cents, or the queer sense of it, as may be appropriate. The impact both at a federal as well as at a state level, and the impact of that can be significant, and oftentimes it is. In jurisdictions where we can't get married, if one partner is required to use some sort of state benefit for long-term care and a house is jointly owned, that house has to be sold off, or a portion of that house has to be sold off so that those assets can be spent down in order to be able to qualify. In many jurisdictions, if you're married, the house is sort of sacred and can't be touched, so that there doesn't have to be a change in the residency of the other partner in a marriage. And that's one small example, but if you extrapolate that across the board for the number of overwhelming benefits, I mean, the federal government alone has over 1,000 benefits that impact us just by virtue of our not being able to marry.
Well, yeah, I mean, I always think, why are we not screaming for Social Security? I mean, I kind of feel like it's you know, there are other areas that are so critical, and they want us, you know, I kind of feel like this whole gauntlet of gay marriage, though it would encompass all of these, and I understand that, became kind of a divisive call in the late to mid-90s, you know, for our community.
And we're seeing it happen. You raise a good point, and this is a conversation that I've had with HRC and with other folks as well. You know, Social Security is probably one of the biggest issues. If you look on average, Social Security survivorship benefit, a married couple, when one of the partners dies in a married couple, the average benefit is about $1,000 a month that goes to the surviving partner. That's $12,000 a year. That's a huge amount of money.
Yep.
For gay and lesbian, because we can't get married, and thanks to the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, because we can't get married, we lose that $12,000 right off the bat.
Right.
And so that's actually a significant issue. You know, you look at the whole Proposition 8 in California and what took place there, and the reality is the exciting thing about that is, while it's a shame that that took place, it has galvanized the community in the United States, the LGBT community, in a way that nothing else has.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, we did a protest with HRC down in Atlanta on Tax Day, and we had very little coverage of that Tax Day protest. The community was by many accounts apathetic, and so the whole Proposition 8 in California has really mobilized the community to say, hey, you know what, we really are getting the raw end of the deal here, and we need to be much more vocal about it.
Right.
When you look at the benefits that don't accrue to us, Social Security is probably one of the biggest ones. But as I said before, there's over hundreds of more benefits, including veterans benefits and a variety of other ones that just have a significant impact. But we don't necessarily feel that until there's a significant change in our life, and then we realize, oh, okay, you know what? You would have been able to get X, Y, or Z benefit had you only had the opportunity to marry.
Yeah. Are there just a few helpful tips when you talk about us as GLBT people having some financial freedom and security? Like, what can we do to protect ourselves right now while there isn't civil unions or same-sex marriage in most of the 50 states? You know, what are some of the good things that people should be doing, small goals for that overall big goal of financial independence?
Well, the first piece, and it's the easiest one to control, is to look at your spending. I mean, the reality is that the majority of us can go ahead and reduce our overall spending in a variety of different areas, whether it's no longer having that daily Starbucks coffee. That's the easiest and most simple thing to do. And in 2009, if you look across your board, one of the things that we do with our clients is we divide our clients' spending into three separate areas. And we call it CPR, their core protection and recreation expenses. And when you look at your core expenses, those are essentially your expenses whether or not you wake up and go to work every day, you're going to have to pay those expenses. So like gas or electricity and rent or your mortgage, those are things you can't get away from. Trying to winnow those down to as little as possible, and then also making sure that you're covering from a protection expenses. Now, for the LGBT community, these protection expenses are really important, and there's a couple of different areas within these protection expenses. One protection expense is obviously savings for both retirement as well as building up that cash reserve, so putting money into that bucket for those. But other areas include disability insurance. Disability insurance, particularly if you're sexually active and you're young, thinking about how you're going to go ahead and replace your income if something should happen to you, if you become ill. That's an important piece to maintaining financial security. And for a fraction of your overall income, you're going ahead and you're ensuring that you'll be able to continue to receive a salary if something were to happen to you and be able to if you were disabled. It's a lot of times people don't necessarily think about that. And it's those protection expenses that often fall by the wayside in favor of recreation expenses, spending on movie, on clothing, on being fierce and fabulous, and on vacations. Oftentimes we'll go ahead and spend money in that arena or in that bucket because it's a lot more fun and it pays off today as opposed to those protection expenses. In addition, looking at life insurance, particularly for LGBT couples, is a great way to replace a lot of the benefits that won't necessarily accrue to us because of the detrimental government policies that are currently in place. So as a result, looking at life insurance for whether it's a term policy or a permanent policy, to replace those expenses or that income that would otherwise be lost in the event of an unexpected death of a partner. So those are a couple of things, and those protection expenses, particularly for our community, are really, really important because they allow us to put ourselves in financial footing that make us independent of both the political system as well as create an opportunity for us to be free from other folks who may necessarily be making decisions on our behalf.
So talk to me. I mean, I love that you said that we should be owners of property so we can rent property out and create protection that way, create our own networks, and also just this power that we wield over our spending and our savings and what we do with our money. Do you think right now is a time for refinancing of mortgages? Is it a time for getting into just very safe investments, or is this a time to enter the market? What are kind of your feelings on some of those practical things right now?
Yeah, let me answer your question a little bit of a different way. I'm president of the DC Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, and so I work with a lot of businesses and LGBT owned businesses. And one of the things across the board that I see is that when a person who's gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender starts and manages and begins to operate their own business, there's a couple things that change about them. One is they feel empowered and they become a stronger supporter of the gay and lesbian community. Mm-hmm. By virtue of owning a business or starting a business, it allows them to go ahead and set the rules, set the tone of the company and how they want to treat and be treated, both with the people who they work for, the vendors that supply them goods and services, as well as the people that work for them. Mm-hmm. And the impact of that is, for example, one business I know of requires a statement from each of the vendors that works with him and his business, a statement on policy and non-discrimination. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a reverse in requiring anybody who wants to do business with him and his business being in a situation where they're going to go ahead and have a policy that doesn't discriminate based on sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. The reality is, these are uncertain times in terms of the financial situation, and the economy. What we're going through is a contraction, and that's what economies do. They expand and they contract. And when we go through an expansion, people often forget that times like this are going to occur, and so they increase their spending and they borrow more money to accommodate a lifestyle that they probably shouldn't have had in the first place. Mm-hmm. So given the current economy that we're in, it makes sense for people to look at their expenses across the board, whether it's refinancing a mortgage or it's paying for some sort of Netflix or even looking at their cable or cell phone bills and what services aren't necessarily required. Then ultimately, as we come out of this recessionary environment, is to continue to maintain those practices so that even if your income continues to increase, you're not expanding your appetite for consumption. And that's where I think most people fall into the trap. you know, if you've got a long time horizon and your goals are a long time horizon, then absolutely continuing to invest on a consistent basis. If you're an older LGBT, looking at your situation and really figuring out what your goals are. One of the interesting things that we find with LGBT seniors who are thinking about retiring is that after they've reached the point of retirement, or what we call financial independence, they realize that a lot of the meaning and satisfaction that they got out of life was from work that they do. So oftentimes what we see is that they'll go ahead and get some sort of a post-retirement job, whether it's working as a docent in a museum or doing some other work that's much more gratifying and mm-hmm. also pays, you know, a salary of some sort. So, you know, if you're at the stage where you're thinking about retirement, you know, the retirement today, particularly for the LGBT community, if you don't have any children or grandkids, may mean that it's a little bit different where you're doing something where you're following your passion and maybe not necessarily getting exactly the same income that you had at your previous job, but allows you to slow down while following your passion. Because after 3 or 4 months of getting together for cocktails every night at 5 o'clock or going out for golf every day, it becomes a little bit of a chore. And so what we see is that people want that mission. They want that social circle. Mm-hmm. And the best way to do that is to maintain an active work life, but just scaling back on the type of work that they're doing.
Gosh, there's just so much we could tap into. And Joe, I hope we can use you again here in the first quarter and, you know, see how things are going and continue this conversation, because it is a unique conversation that we have as GLBT people to come to a place, as you have said, of financial independence, financial freedom, that it's not about how much, it's about our securities and our protections. And it's something that we have to empower ourselves to do for ourselves. And we've learned that as a community, or hopefully we hear media and our leaders in the GLBT community constantly tell us to do that, you know, protect ourselves, do for ourselves what we can until the laws change. So, Joe, I know that you also contribute and are friendly with the website queersense.com. Highly encourage people to check out Queer Sense. Sometimes it's a bit lighter information too, some fun information about money. It doesn't all have to be doom and gloom these days. And also HRC is a great resource, I know you think, about finances.
Yeah, HRC has some great resources. We're in conversations with them. We did a program last year about 7 days to a better financial you. We're in discussions with them again for possibly rolling out a similar program again this year to talk about similar issues. As you said, you know, I can't underscore enough the importance of figuring out what your goals are, and then living not living at your means, but living below your means, and figuring out what your goals are, and spend less than what you really need to, and then save the rest of that. You'll be in a better situation financially, and you won't rely on anybody else to make decisions for you.
And also, you can invite somebody into the conversation, which is what Joe and Nick do with people as leaders and as planners for folks. When do you think that people should reach out to a financial planner? Is that something that this is a good time to seek?
Yeah, I mean, you know, reaching out to a financial planner, I mean, first and foremost, any good financial planner is going to ask you what your goals are. And so even before that, thinking about what your goals are. And for a lot of people, that's really amorphous. A lot of people haven't spent a lot of time thinking about that. You know, what is it that they're trying to achieve? Why are they working? What are the activities in their life that bring them the most value? And then beginning to assign a value. We worked with some clients who one of them wanted to be a writer and certainly had the opportunity. She was an attorney and was spending a lot of money. And by restructuring the way that she was living her life, she was able to go ahead and put herself on a track to be able to reach that goal or work towards that goal. So I think first and foremost, even before reaching out to any advisor, is determining what the ultimate goal is that we're trying to achieve. You know, in today's age with Blackberries and Wii and Guitar Hero and all these games out there and these distractions, we really have very little time to spend thinking. And I think that's probably the first and foremost important thing, is to just spend a little bit of time. Take a weekend to think about what your goals are for 2009, and then what are the tactical steps that you're going to take. You know, bringing on a financial advisor is a step that maybe is a second step to that once you've determined what your goals are. Mm-hmm. And sitting down with somebody who's going to help you, craft a plan towards those goals, it would be the second step.
Well, it's great. You have given us some things to chew on and to think about, and maybe we can all stop and breathe and think about what we want our goals financially to be for our lives and what would make us happy, because it's not always more. It's not always more, as we have heard. Thank you for being on. Joe is a financial advisor in the D.C. area. If you're not in the D.C. area, definitely check out queersense.com and also check out hrc.org. We'll have both of those linked on our show notes. And Joe, we hope to have you on the show again real soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY. So, Deb, when next we speak, it will be the end of the Bush era. And,
I ever want to see the end of a Bush era for myself personally, but that's a whole different thing altogether.
So is Toronto, I mean, are there parties for the United States of America happening in Toronto? I would imagine people are going to watch this inauguration.
Absolutely. If you were a supporter of Facebook, you'd see that everyone internationally is joining a CNN Facebook group for his big day. I've got my open mic night, one night stand happening every Tuesday, and we will be piping in the CNN. So yeah, no, it's huge, because what you guys do affects what we do, because what you guys do affects the entire world. So I think, and I specifically am very enlightened about Kate Clinton, her saging and smudging around the White House. I've been so intrigued by when I heard her and met her this summer, her talking about that. It seemed a long way away, because it didn't matter who was getting in. He was getting out pretty much, and she was going in there to sage it. So, I mean, the fact that the big old dyke is going there with a whole bunch of other dykes and allies to get rid of all that energy, good riddance. Don't let the door hit you on the ass.
Yeah. It's true. It is the beginning of something so new. And, you know, I was talking to my grandmother yesterday, and she's so funny. I asked her, she was excited about it, and she said, well, I guess I'll watch it. And I said something about, well, you know, he's going to have a lot of work to do. And she goes, yep. And they're going to expect him to do it all by 1 week. And I do think that's a real sentiment, that there is going to be great impatience, toward his change and toward what he's going to do.
We're an instant gratification society, right? We want things now. I mean, just the fact that he might be closing, and talk about closing Guantanamo Bay within his first day, that's what they're alleging. That's amazing. He set himself up for that, and let's hold him to task on that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's what it's going to take. Yeah, I think that's what it's going to take for us as a GLBT community. I mean, obviously within our community, many people have different causes, whether it's healthcare, stem cell research, the environment, money. I mean, there are so many areas that people, that are hot topics, that people want to see what he will do. But in terms of, for us as GLBT people, I mean, are we going to hold his feet to the fire with Don't Ask, Don't Tell? Are we going to hold his feet to the fire with civil unions and many of the promises that he made? And how long are we going to give him, understanding that he has some other very real demands right now with Afghanistan, with the economic climate that he's entering? You know, how much time are we going to give him, and how much mobility are we going to need to see?
Well, has he been able to, since his election, since he was elected, has he been able to meet with people to put things into place, or does he have to start carte blanche? I mean, I know he's setting up the people that he wants, but is he able to meet and say, listen, on the 20th, we've got to do this, 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 and this, what do you think? Or does he have to just put these people in a place and wait? Who knows? I don't know.
Oh, I think he puts people in place. They know what his platform is on most topics. They probably meet, and then they all set agendas. I mean, it's very, I love that episode of The West Wing, and I was a diehard West Wing fan. And in the final season, where Jimmy Smits is coming in as the first Latino president, after, Martin Sheen, who just would have been the president I would have loved for us to have had the past 8 years. And there's this moment where you just see that as Jimmy Smits and his family are walking, getting ready to walk down the inaugural path, and Bush's, you know, family then, or the president Sheen's family, would be, you know, saying goodbye to all the staff members. As they walk out of the White House, there is a moving truck, and all the staff have all their boxes packed, and they all walk out of the White House simultaneously. And within the time he has raised his hand and taken the oath of office, and they walk in, every Michelle and the two, Sasha and Malia and Barack's furniture, photos, clothes will all have been placed within the White House. And it is like
unbelievable,
a turn of a page. It is. Yeah. That is how it happens. And all of the new, you know, they have White House staff, and those won't change. But then their staff, the Obama administration staff, moves right in, and the Bush administration staff walks right out. It is absolutely like going through a revolving door. And it is that quick, and it is that seamless. It will happen in the matter of hours.
And yet, not soon enough.
Isn't that crazy?
That is
that
weird.
We can
it's
manifest
like a hotel
that?
Room. You have more room, more time in a hotel room to have it turned over.
That's just exactly. It's crazy.
That is crazy.
Oh, my
That's
Lord.
That's crazy.
It's fascinating. I wish we could watch it. That was what was so fascinating on the West Wing, was watching it.
Right. Well, we're certainly not quite technologically advanced enough to have webcams. Can you imagine the Obama webcam?
That would be fantastic. I think we should.
I'd watch.
But I mean, seriously, like picking up lamps off tables, unscrewing placards off walls, brand new pictures, you know, within they'll have carpet layers lay his new carpet in his Oval Office. I mean, everything is done within hours. Jaw-dropping to me. It seems like magic, honestly.
It's terrifying to me, though, those things. The whole thing is just so powerful.
Yeah.
And so dynamic.
Yeah. It's very exciting. I find myself giddy sitting here talking about it. I'm just curious. My curiosity and hope is piqued. So on to the next era, and you and I will be talking the next time in it.
I'm going to find out the religion of my prime minister.
Go do that for me for next time. And hey, guys, Steven Rader, well, we know his religion. It's just sexy. Steven Rader will be on the next show. We'll be talking about the inauguration, what we felt, and also about how GLBT people were represented, and what's going on with this new administration that is seamlessly going to step into place, and how seamlessly will they make it through their first week. Steven Rader on the next Queercast. Deb, stay warm, warm, warm.
Will do. Thank you. You too.
And we'll talk to you in February.
Yay.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.